This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleagues, Senator Maria Fernanda Cabal of the Columbia Legislature. She's traveling in North America. And Joseph Umar, the Executive Director of Secure Free Society. We go to Colombia because there's positive news to begin with, which is that the President of Colombia, Iván Duque, has received his first dose of Pfizer's vaccine. The Reuters report, Colombian President Iván Duque received his first dose of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine on Sunday within these hours, as he urged people to continue protecting themselves against the coronavirus amid a new record in daily deaths. Colombia, which has recorded more than 95,000 COVID-19 deaths, is in the process of vaccinating everyone over age 60 and people between ages 16 and 59 with pre-existing conditions, as well as teachers and military personnel. Colombia began its vaccination campaign in February, prioritizing medical staff and older people. Its aim to vaccinate more than 35 million people this year, 70% of the population. And it has administered so far 12.9 million doses. Maria, help us understand what the virus is right now in Colombia with winter coming on, and that the administration is seeking to vaccinate many, many more people, 70% of the population. Is that a credible ambition by the central government, given the unrest that we've talked about these last weeks?
Yes. Fortunately, government is finally getting on the way to get people vaccinated. We have received a donation also from the U.S. It is around, I don't remember if it's 3 million or more vaccines. Another Johnson & Johnson coming through. So we expect to get more and more people vaccinated. However, because of the riots promoted, many promoted, but by these leftist unionists and many financed by the narcotraffic money, you could see the infection rising. Today, all the emergency rooms have collapsed. We are getting 600 people, around 600 people dying per day. So we are also reaching 100,000 deaf people, I think, in the next 3 or 4 days for total in death during the pandemic. So this has to have a responsible one, because you cannot be a leader talking against government and against policies and against everything and claiming things that it is impossible to get, and get hundreds and thousands of people in the streets. This is very irresponsible for the promoters of this strike. So today we're over the 100% of occupation. This is a collapse of the system, and is basically because of the rioters.
Yes, Joseph, let's recover what we've learned these last weeks from Maria and from the news. It appears that the deployment of the military to the troubled parts of the country, I'm looking chiefly at Cali in that region, has resulted in an apparent stability, although the protests continue, I'm certain, day to day. How does this deployment of the army answer the questions that you and Maria have raised over these last weeks, that this is a product of outside actors, chiefly Venezuela, but there are other names that have been mentioned? And have those outside actors pulled back or reconsidered their campaign? Is this a quiet between another episode and it getting worse?
So, John, the most important thing I think that the police and the Ministry of Defense have done in Colombia right now is they've apprehended certain individuals that are linked to those outside actors, that are linked to narco-terrorist groups, particularly the ELN and the FARC, and have shown and demonstrated with proof, with wiretap, with audio recordings, with documented evidence about the foreign interference and also the just the manipulation of the national protests that turn into violent riots. So I think that that documentation was very critical because it helped shift the narrative of the protests in Colombia being simply a peaceful protest that's getting abused by the Colombian authorities to now look upon as a some type of agitation by internal actors, but foreign actors that's escalating the protests into almost unprecedented levels of violence, which gives more room for the Duque government to seek a resolution to the current crisis. Now, I think that right now we're in a different phase. You know, the beginning of what we saw since late April into May, what we that was the essentially the escalation phase where the violence happened, the rioting, the roadblocks, and then that led to the negotiation phase, which is where we're at right now. And now it's very critical for the Duque government to either resolve this through some type of peaceful resolution, or he'll make concessions. That's the danger part. That's what some of these agitators, these foreign actors want. They want to see the Duque government make the same kind of concessions in Colombia that the Piñera government made in Chile. And we know that that led to a potential complete reform of their constitution, leading to maybe perhaps more socialist reforms. So that's where Duque has to stop. He has to not concede that throughout the whole, as they say, throughout the baby with the bathwater in terms of the constitution, look for specific resolutions on specific issues. They resolve this without having to fundamentally change the Magna Carta in Colombia. And I think that that's where he's at right now. But the pressure's still there. The pressure's still there. In Cali, even though it's relatively more peaceful, the effect of those roadblocks and those violent protests are still felt. The prices of the basic food is still very high. People are still in a lot of anxiety. So it's not over yet.
Maria, you're traveling, and in the Washington area, your measure is the Biden administration. Are members of Congress well informed of what Joseph just outlined, outside agitators driving this disorder?
No, never. You know, usually the Congress people here in the U.S., they don't get the information at all, or when they get it first through leftist NGOs that distort reality. And what we have been living in Colombia is really one of the worst situations that we have ever lived in our lives. And it's especially located in Cali, remember. Some in Bogota, but Bogota is very much bigger, has more than 10 million population. But Cali is the center of this new way of making a war to destroy a country. And they want to make the appearance that is because the dispute among the social classes, you know, is the same Marxist theory that wants to sell us as if we were living maybe in the mid-century. Valle del Cauca, yes, we have a lot of poverty. That's true. But we have one of the most developed and prominent economies in Colombia. Our region feeds internally and internationally too with food. So what I want to aware is that today one of the worst weapons, unfortunately, is the network, is the media. It distorts everything. As I told you before, I brought more than 180 fake news that you could navigate on it and see how they change the videos to show the police as a murder police. The objective, defund the police. The objective is leaving the citizens without any protection. This promotes more violent reactions among citizens. So this is like a written drama to follow. So we are following it. And unless President Duque stops any kind of conversation with these people that we are aware that works with illegally, we will be always a threat in maintaining the stability of our democracy.
Joseph, what is gained by undermining the government in Bogota? Who gains from that and how?
So geographically, Colombia is a very strategic country. It's essentially the crossroads between the Caribbean, the Atlantic, and the Pacific. For that reason, it was considered the jewel of the crown in terms of the Spanish conquest back in the 17th century. So in that sense, who gains is anyone that can essentially take Colombia and push it more into its own geopolitical orbit. At the top of the list is obviously the Maduro regime in Venezuela and its partners in Havana and in La Paz and in Managua and other parts of the region. But I think more broader than that is the external actors, Russia, China, and Iran. Now, they might not have their direct fingerprints on the particular protests that are happening right now, but they're definitely going to have auxiliary support to the agitators that are currently involved, meaning the Maduro regime of Venezuela, the ELN, and the FARC. And let's not forget that this whole crisis in some way kicked off after the Russians did an overflight over Colombian airspace on April 19th. Basically, since April 19th, everything in Colombia just went into chaos. And so I'm not alluding that they're having any direct participation, but I do know that they benefit from this kind of unrest.
And Caracas, does it gain specifically? I mean, given the disorder and the collapse of the Venezuela people, I mean, they're flooding the region with refugees, and the apparatus does not work except for the elite inside. It's become, well, to compare it too simply, the North Korea of Latin America. So how can Caracas gain directly from undermining confidence in President Duque?
Yeah, well, aside from being able to position Colombia in the perception of the people and the international community as a failed state, which would allow them to then promote an alternative political candidate in next year's elections, which one of the most likely candidates is a senator named Gustavo Petro. But aside from those political gains that they would get, the material gains come from the illicit economies. Venezuela, the Maduro regime is motored, its lifeblood right now is its illicit economy. And to be able to connect and extend that illicit economy into Colombia would allow them to conquer more territory and to essentially get more money. So I think that they're behind that as well.
Joseph Umar, the executive director of Secure Free Society. Maria Fernanda Cabal, senator of the Colombia legislature, traveling in North America. We're going to turn to Venezuela next. And actually, we're also going to include two warships outbound from Iran, somewhere in the South Atlantic, to where? I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.